It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We continue our candidate conversations ahead of the nonpartisan primary election for the superintendent of public instruction. The primary is set for February 16th. Seven candidates are in the race ahead of the April 6th general election. And now we have Troy Gunderson, an adjunct faculty at Viterbo University in La Crosse and a former superintendent of the West Salem School District. What do you want to know about his priorities for public schools in our state? It's 800-642-1234. Troy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So explain why you want this job to be the next state superintendent.
Well, I spent 35 years in public education and grew up in a little town called Colfax in northern Wisconsin. And my mother's a teacher, and my wife's a teacher, and father-in-law's a teacher. And so like everything that we have and all the opportunities I've had in my lifetime have been connected to public education. And at the end of my career, I decided it was time for me to step up to the plate and give something back. So I'd like to serve the entire state. And I think what separates me from the other candidates is I have connections in all four corners of the state. And I think I have the ability to bring the state together for the common purpose of serving children.
What are your top priorities for the job?
Well, my top priorities would be having the state ready to lead, which is connecting us to all of the state into an opportunity or an exercise where we really redefine how public education is going to play a role in moving the state forward. And underneath that, students ready to learn, which is about serving kids and their families, making access to early childhood programming and mental health and equity and all the issues that go around students. Teachers ready to teach is investing in how to find the next generation of teachers and making sure the career stays viable for everybody. And then if we get all that right, we should produce future-ready graduates, kids who are career, college, and life ready so that they can become productive citizens of this great state.
The pandemic has been a huge hit to education in our state, as you know. When should teachers and students be in the classroom? When should class be held virtually? How do you negotiate that?
Yeah, I think it's all about using the metrics and the data from the experts in terms of safety. We really have to, now that we're in this deep, make sure we're providing vaccinations for our teachers. But studies have come out showing that the process and the protocols around protective personal gear for kids and teachers really has been able to keep kids safer. And as long as the experts are telling us what protocol to follow and how to stay safe, we should be able to follow their guidelines. I think that's the key for me, is that we have avoided taking the input from experts and then following it. We need to have leadership in Madison that provides a sort of a rubric for each part of the state, and so that as you look at the data that's impacting your kids, both in your community and your school, you know where the safety line is. And there's people who are experts in communicable diseases that know where those lines are, and we should be following their advice.
What would your plan be to help students get caught up? They're falling behind grade level. How do you catch them up?
Yeah. Well, I think we should be really looking at what we're doing in summer school this summer to be able to give kids opportunities to get back. And then I think it's about assessing, what's happened from the pandemic. I mean, I think, everything that we talk about in terms of achievement and access for kids somewhat has been speculative. And I think that's where the DPI's leadership role would be, is to help collect the data from both nationally and around our state to know, what impact has been on families and children in terms of emotional and academic progress, and then strategize a plan for closing that gap back up and getting folks back on track moving forward. I think is really something that we could do as a team. Again, I look at the approach to all of these types of issues in Wisconsin as a team, using our cooperative education service agencies and the DPI to develop a strategy to roll that out. So we collect the data, we know where we're at, we develop a strategy, and we move forward. And I think the DPI has to facilitate that leadership and provide direction for all the people who are connected.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with one of the seven candidates running for state superintendent. Troy Gunderson is an adjunct Viterbo University instructor of school finance, former superintendent of the West Salem School District. Taking your questions, 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about his goals, his qualifications? What do you want to see out of DPI as an agency going forward? call in. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Let's bring in Francisco joining us from Sister Bay. Hi, Francisco.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Are you aware that we are still funding the public schools according to the Constitution of 1848? That from the real estate tax, we get money to pay for the police, to pay for the schools, to pay for the everything municipally. Everything that the municipals do need, we pay out of the real estate tax. And it is unconstitutional for people who come here and make billions of dollars to pay a single penny for maintaining the municipalities.
And Francisco, I'm going to jump in here. Troy, how would you change Wisconsin's funding formulas for higher ed? I'm sorry, not for higher ed, for public schools.
Well, there's a couple things about that. The property tax thing, things that Francisco is alluding to, are part of attempting to add stability to the system. But I think he's right in that we've been too reliant on that. I would take the current system has to be, first off, the amount of funding into the equalization aid formula was declined, frozen for so many years in a row that it forced people to conduct referendas, which then adds more to the property tax and further adds to the inequity. So we need to first add more money to that to raise the revenue limit base. And the second thing is some children are more expensive than others. And so we've really lost our way in that part of the game.
What do you mean by that? Some children are more expensive than others?
Well, special education children, some of them cost more than other students, and we aren't funding that at what the rate we should be. Children who need English language learner services, children who need mental health services, children who are homeless. And I think there's ways in which you can identify the children that fit into different categories of additional expense and layer that over instead of providing straight per pupil aid to districts that we currently do. So we get the current model. It needs to be layered over on what's called a categorical per pupil expense, depending upon the category piece, and then additional funding for special education, which is a way in which you add more money to all of the other services because you have to spend that money first. And then when you look at the whole state funding formula, where do you get the additional money from? We're just dumping an enormous amount of money into the voucher program for private schools who in most cases aren't near as competent as the public schools are in terms of using that money. So there's money there if we can reorganize it. I think that's what his question is why are we so reliant on property taxes? And I think there should be a better distribution of that money from other sources other than property tax.
So which schools in your vision would receive more funding?
Well, places where they have more free and reduced kids, more English language. So if you look at just, in my area of the state, you look at the school district of La Crosse, they have about half their kids on free and reduced lunch, but in West Salem, only about a quarter. They have more special education kids. So if we talk about their baseline funding, and then over and above that would be based upon the number of children that fit into those categories that you have. Currently, and during the last decade, the folks in Wisconsin came up with a per pupil categorical aid that they just gave for every child. And so kids in the school district of Whitefish Bay is getting the same as Milwaukee. The school district of West Salem is getting the same as La Crosse. And the kids don't fit in the categories that are the same expense. We have to accept the fact and take that into reality to be able to better fund, because we're not serving these children, our neediest children.
And let's talk about equity here for a moment. How would you address Wisconsin's enormous racial and economic disparities that are dividing student achievement across our state?
Well, the economic ones we just talked about, because really, if you look at the state on a whole, the suburban school districts are the ones who win in the current model, and in the urban districts and the rural districts are the ones who are where the inequity is. They are unable to provide the same kind of services that you can in the suburban places where they have money. The racial equity issues is about, I think, awareness on our part and a willingness to step up and do that. We've got a 100-year history in Wisconsin of being unwilling to do that in certain areas. And that's just something that we have to be able to have that crucial conversation and talk about moving that forward. And just from an internal piece, it's about, you know, culturally aware teaching and being willing to say not everyone looks the same and not everyone requires the same approach. And until and unless we're ready to accept that and work together as a state and accept that the changes or the differences in equity are the same, we have issues all over the state. It's not just a southeastern Wisconsin problem. It's not just a northern problem or a western problem. It's all of us. And we have to make that our focus. And that's what I talked about earlier about ready to lead. We have to pull the whole state together to focus on that issue, because the data and the results and our status as a nation or as a state in this nation just depend upon it. What we've done to...
How would you address the curriculum? What changes would you make
to the curriculum? Well, I think about just being culturally aware curriculum, examples of kids and success from all areas. I mean, children of all different socioeconomic and racial categories need to see people that look like them and come from the same places as them being successful. And so being able to weave that into the curriculum and working together and learning from each other, sharing what success stories have had, because this is about pedagogy and how you are reaching children. It's not about what you're teaching. It's about how you're doing that and the relationships you're making with kids so that you can move them forward.
Troy, thank you for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on here. I really appreciate it.
Troy Gunderson is former superintendent of the West Salem School District. Coming up, we meet with members of an advisory committee who are working to place a statue of Wisconsin civil rights icon Val Phillips at the state capitol. How would you like Wisconsin to honor Phillips' life and legacy? 800-642-1234. We'll discuss the trailblazer Val Phillips after this news update here on the Ideas Network.